You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. The first week of the 2019 legislative session is wrapping up, and lawmakers have been busy with budgets as well as orientation. There was other news throughout Idaho this week, though, from lawsuits to health care. Taking us through the maze of news is our weekly reporter roundtable. With me today, Rebecca Boone of the Boise Bureau of the Associated Press. Scott McIntosh, he is the editor with the Idaho Press, and Don Day of the website Boise Dev. Happy Friday.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's just kick it off with the legislature. Governor Little gave his first State of the State speech on Monday. Not a lot happened early on. Probably the big story that came out of this, Rebecca, let's start with you, was that Governor Little came out this week and said the state would appeal a judge's ruling about an Idaho transgender inmate's confirmation surgery. So kind of give us a background on that and where we are now.
Right. So this has been an ongoing problem in Idaho prisons and elsewhere, or an ongoing issue, rather, where we have transgender inmates who want to have medical treatment that they say they require for their medical condition called gender dysphoria, which is where your identity, the gender that you believe to be mm-hmm. or that you feel you are, doesn't match your external characteristics, right? And so that's a big issue. How do you treat these inmates? What medical care do they need and what should be considered optional? And that really, in the medical profession, appears to vary from professional to professional, but mm-hmm. also depends at law on the degree of gender dysphoria that a person has. So there is an inmate, Adre Edmo, in the Idaho prisons, and she is transgender. She has been fighting for the right for gender confirmation surgery, also sometimes called gender reassignment surgery, which is where the external characteristics of her body would be modified by a plastic surgeon to match her gender. The state doesn't want to pay for this, partly because it's hardly paid for anywhere. I mean, I think there's been one other inmate in the nation that's gotten this surgery on a state dime, and that's been in California. So it's not considered the standard of care within prisons, at least at this point in time. And it's also, you know, can be pretty expensive and raises a whole bunch of other questions about where the inmate is then housed, mm-hmm. what sort of aftercare they need, things like that. So she sued. She won at the federal court level. And now the state is appealing that ruling to the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals.
And this has been a controversial topic. I mean, all you have to do is look at any news story that has been written around this. And I mean, I know, Scott, your newspaper, you know, of course, wrote about this. There are hundreds of comments about this.
Yeah, and there are hundreds of different mm-hmm. positions on it. And, you know, a lot of folks say, you know, is this a necessity? If somebody breaks their arm or, you know, something, you definitely need to provide that medical service. And a lot of folks are questioning whether this is a necessary surgery.
What's been interesting to me about just, and I'm talking just about, you know, the comments on social media, things like that, when an article about this has been posted, is, as you said, Scott, the range, because some people are absolutely against this from the point that they don't even believe that this is that when we talk about the dysmorphia, that this is even real, right? To the fact that even if they believe that someone is transgender, why should we be picking up the tab?
Right. And so I think most of the medical professionals, both within the Idaho prisons and outside of Idaho prisons, have said yes. Ms. Edmo needs medical care. It's a question of what kind of medical care. Mm. I mean, she and other transgender inmates, it is not uncommon for them to commit great self-harm trying to modify their own body characteristics to be a little delicate mm-hmm. Themselves, doing self-surgery in prison, which can be fatal. She's tried twice. In her case, it wasn't fatal, but she nearly died. And that entailed some pretty serious surgery to repair the efforts that she had made in herself. So it's a medical problem. It's not just, you know, I mean, it's something that actually mm-hmm. leads to many, many symptoms that can be very detrimental if untreated.
And she is living as a woman within a male prison, correct?
Well, that's an interesting point. So she has made attempts to, in that she identifies as a woman. She lived as a woman previously, according to her lawsuit, before she went into prison. But she's in a male prison, and they had rules about, like, can you cut your hair or style your hair as a woman if you're a male inmate? you can't do that. Can you modify your clothing? She tried to modify her clothing to make, give it a more feminine appearance. She was actually given disciplinary reports for those, according to her lawsuit. And she says that's what prevented her from being released on parole at her parole hearing.
Interesting. So now that it goes up for appeal, we wait?
We wait. And so Governor Brad Little's argument in his announcement was like, look, this is not a surgery that most Idahoans can get covered on their individual insurance. So it's not fair to ask those taxpayers to pay for this surgery for an inmate.
So we will wait and see what happens. John, I want to bring you into the conversation. You did an update this week on Boise Dev about the Boise Library. Get us updated on this, because the Gardner Company had been a part of this and now is not.
Yeah, boy, this has been a heck of a story since it came out 6 months ago. And not to get on my soapbox, but this is a place where journalism matters, because you have three organizations in this town aggressively covering this, and each one kind of has a new angle just about every week, it seems.
Well, and there's something new, it seems, every week.
And there's two things this week. One comes from me, and then I'll talk about another one. So about a year and a half ago, it was announced that Gardner Company had won this bid to help develop the library project. And you didn't really hear anything about Gardner Co. They had teamed up with a Salt Lake City construction management firm called Oakland Construction. And it was kind of strange, because then they brought in a local firm, Jordan Wilkham. And what first got me interested in this is Jordan Wilkham owns land across the street from the library. And they are going to help. They're going to work with the city to develop a parking structure that was actually uncovered by Scott's newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, this is kind of strange. And there was language in there that essentially said that the city says that any potential conflicts of interest by Jordan Wilkham are – we know about it.
So the city says.
Yeah, we know there might be a conflict of interest.
Okay.
We're okay. So as I started to get into that, it turned out Jordan Wilkham had actually left the contract. And Gardner Company had left the contract, leaving just Oakland Construction.
Out of Salt Lake City.
Out of Salt Lake City. And what's interesting is when you look at the initial scoring, it came down to two different proposing groups. One was made up of Gardner Company in Oakland, and the other one was made up of two local firms, Oppenheimer Development Company and McIlvain. And when you look at the scoring, there were two components: development, which you would think would be in Gardner's bucket, and construction management. On the construction management piece, the Oakland team scored 46 points, and the McIlvain team scored 46 points. They tied. The reason that Gardner Oakland won the bid is because of Gardner's experience in the development side, and now they're taken away from the contract. The city says this is appropriate. The development phase is over. They're moving towards a construction phase. You know, I talked to some of the other people here in an off-the-record basis, mm-hmm. people that were not part of the contract who didn't win, and I think there's definitely some frustration without characterizing an off-the-record conversation. But the city says it's all above board. They say that this is kosher, and the implication for this is that Oakland Construction of Salt Lake could stand to bring home tens of millions of dollars if this project is built out. And that leads to, we don't know how much this is going to cost. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different estimates. We've heard $80 million. We've heard $100 million. And then the other big piece of news this week came in an op-ed written by former Boise State President Bob Custra. He came out and essentially backed a proposal by a Democratic legislator here in the Valley to put the library and the stadium to a vote. Mm-hmm. That turned a lot of heads, including mine, because Dr. Custer has generally been pretty pro-development. He has certainly backed a lot of projects on the Boise State campus when mm-hmm. he was president. And for a time, he championed Boise State working with the city
to build a baseball stadium. Right.
He's no longer the president, although I think he's still got a pretty big presence in town. And he came out and said, yeah, we should take this to the voters, which made a lot of people kind of scratch their heads and go, well, what's going on there? And I think there's more to tell there.
Do you think part of that, though, is that we saw initiatives go to voters? We saw propositions. You know, we saw Prop 2, Prop 1 go to voters. One passed, one failed. Is there something in that idea that you know what? People will show up if you put these on the ballot. I'm just
yeah. I mean,
out
I think
that
that's
there.
Part of what they're trying to say. They're trying to sort of stay neutral. Mm-hmm. If they really thought that these things should happen, they probably wouldn't step up at all, right?
Right.
Because then they would just naturally go along. I've said that 2019 is really a referendum on growth here in the Treasure Valley. There are municipal elections in November. Mm-hmm. Mayors in Boise and Meridian will come up, and a raft of city council seats in all the cities will come up. And if people want to have a direct impact on the decisions being made around growth, that's where. And those are usually low turnout elections. But I think we're going to see a pretty active election cycle this year, regardless of whether the stadium and library actually get on the mm-hmm. ballot.
It just, as you said, it seems every day something new comes out around this library.
It does. I mean, I always feel like Scott has a great reporter, Margaret Carmel, who does some really good work. And I feel like I'm always chasing her because she's got a great scoop. And to their credit, the Idaho Statesman's done a lot of good work here, too. Yeah. They're big, complicated projects. There's a lot to them, both of them. And they aren't related except for they're both kind of civically driven
right.
ideas to build big physical new structures in Boise.
Which makes a big impact, as you said, on growth, on development. Whether they're if they're built, it says something. If they're not built, it says something.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the stadium project is there is no stadium project right now. There just isn't. They had a piece of land. They let the piece of land go. They identified another spot. There's no contract signed, and there's some problems with that. Boise State is moving forward pretty aggressively with their plans for a ballpark on Beacon Street, but probably not large enough for professional baseball, although the Idaho Press reported that the folks that want to do the stadium downtown, mm-hmm. that own the Boise Hawks, again went back and talked to Boise State. So lots of questions here. What's going to happen? Will they ever happen? Both of these projects wanted to start turning ground in 2018, and here we are in 19, and we're not even close.
Not even close. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Let's jump right back into our look back of the week's news with our reporter roundtable. This week, we've got people in the hot seat. Rebecca Boone of the Boise Bureau of the Associated Press, Scott McIntosh. He is the editor with the Idaho Press, and Don Day of the website Boise Dev. And Scott, it seems like every time you come in here, you get the bad news. But there was a story that continues to make headlines this week. And this is the story of the De Leons, who were killed by her ex-husband. And then the ex-husband killed himself.
Right. And this is, you know, a really sad story. And unfortunately, it's an increasingly common occurrence. Mm-hmm. This was the third such intimate partner murder-suicide in the last 7 months in Meridian alone. This is something that's growing in Idaho. The numbers are kind of shocking that there were 6 of these cases in 2015, and then there were 17 in 2017, and then just from January to November of 2018, there were 17 of these murder suicides. 3 in Meridian. There were a couple in Canyon County, and it's a growing problem. That you know, it's one of those things that. Doesn't get well. It happens, and we talk about it, and then it kind of goes away until the next mm-hmm. case of it. And you know, every time we do these stories, we have these you know, warning signs and things that you can do to protect yourself. And we seem to have this mentality of how can we all adjust ourselves and adapt our behavior to respond to these crazy people who are doing this stuff. And it seems to me. What particularly struck me after this last case is that it seems like we need to shift the conversation a little bit to what do we do when these warning signs happen? What do we do about the guy who's – and it's usually a man mm-hmm. who commits these acts. What do we do about – you know, there are reports that this guy had pointed a gun at his ex-wife and threatened to kill her. Well – we can't do anything about that. So she got a protection order just a couple of days before this.
One day before it was served
was
on him, the night before
yeah.
it was served on him.
Right. And you know, again, when we reported that, you know, a lot of people said, well, that's a piece of paper and that really isn't going to do much. So when you have these warning signs, it seems like we should be doing more to ameliorate what the suspect is doing mm-hmm. rather than trying to hide and protect ourselves from this mm-hmm. this person. So.
What's interesting too, though, is when you bring up the numbers. That's, I think, this is horrible and tragic because there were also children in the home when this happened, and there was a hostage situation. So there's so many layers to this. But then when you said there were 17 cases just in 2018 right. in Idaho, that is shocking. That is a lot.
Right. And Idaho is one of the higher rates of this in the country for whatever reason. And yeah, this particular case was really tragic because there were three children who were in the house when all this happened. One girl escaped. Two others were there, held hostage for a while during this situation. And, you know, again, this Heidi De Leon had divorced her husband and remarried and, you know, had this normal family life and seemingly happy family. And I mean, now these three children have no parents.
Right.
And were witness to something really, really horrific.
I want to turn the conversation a bit. And Don, let's bring you back into it because you broke this story this week. Washington Federal expanding in Boise, purchasing bodybuilding headquarters. But what's interesting about this, as you pointed this out, is it's kind of like one business on the rise, but kind of one business on the decline. Because at one point, bodybuilding.com was big and, you know, and it was growing and we saw such growth within that company.
Yeah, and I think bodybuilding.com will continue to be a pretty significant presence mm-hmm. here for quite some time. But they have a 100,000 square foot building out near HP in Boise. And for a while, they took up all 100,000 square feet. They've kind of retrenched down a little bit. And the building had been on the market. Washington Federal Bank out of Seattle said, hey, you know what? We're going to buy that. It was $15 million for the building and the campus. Bodybuilding will continue to occupy about half of the building for now. You know, we haven't heard a lot in the way of layoffs in a while, though. In late 2016, they laid off about 100 folks. They've had a little bit of leadership turmoil. They're in a tough market. They're competing with Amazon, as most retailers in both the online and offline space are. So they still employ a lot of people here. But as I was talking to Washington Federal officials yesterday, they said one of the reasons that they bought the building is it gives them room to grow over time. So what that means for bodybuilding.com and could it move, could it go somewhere else? I think that's unclear. But it does put $15 million on their balance sheet that wasn't there before. So that's
there you go. That's
certainly
nice.
Helpful. And but yeah, it's really interesting. Washington Federal, for its part, is really staffing up here. They've added people in the IT space. They've already added 25 people. They're all located in their bank location downtown. And Brad Good, who's the SVP for communications out of Seattle, said they're bursting at the seams. They just need more space. So it's an interesting story. They're really looking at Boise to be kind of one of their big hubs. And I think it'll mean more growth in jobs and really, frankly, relatively high-paying jobs for Treasure Valley workers as we go along.
And Rebecca, one thing with the legislature did this week, they added another immunization of school-required vaccinations, correct?
So the Health and Welfare Committee in the House approved a rule or are recommending that the rest of the legislature approve this rule that adds a second dose of the meningococcal vaccine to the school required list. Now, required is sort of a strange term for this because Idaho also allows all parents to just opt out for, you know, whatever personal reason they might feel they have. That being said, most kids now these days who get this vaccine, the first dose, you know, around seventh grade or earlier, and it tends to wear off over time. And of course, kids are at risk of this potentially catastrophic disease, although it is rare, when they live in the risk increases when you're in group living situations like a college dorm. And so Health and Welfare wanted to add a second dose for seniors in high school, 12th graders, so that they can re-up their immunity, be fully protected, whether they go to college or, you know, stay at home.
Mm-hmm. And so where does it have to go from here then in order to get actual approval?
Well, so this was an administrative rule. And so the committee has now recommended that they approve it. And then the rest of the legislature will have to basically decide. And since they have the committee's recommendation, typically these rules will just sort of be approved.
Okay.
Although that's never a guarantee.
Right. It's never a guarantee. Okay, Scott, long and convoluted story, but let's try to make it as clear and quick as possible. The sale of Salzer Medical Group, it was picked up by BVA, but this is really just kind of like the latest chapter in this.
Yeah, but I think there's something going on here. This is a big deal. So BVA is run by Tommy Ahlquist, ran for governor, built the 8th and Main building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who know Tommy know that he's not a small thinker. And, you know, during his run for governor, he talked about revolutionizing healthcare. And so now he's opening a couple of, well, medical centers that he might be called a hospital. Or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Yeah. Well, just call them, well, in air quotes, call them medical centers.
And now he's purchased Salzer Medical Group, which is a large medical group that was purchased by St. Luke's a few years ago, and it had to get undone because of a court ruling that it was an antitrust matter. And so now BVA has gone in and purchased it, and heading this up is Ed Casseldine. And so Ed Casseldine, just about a year or so ago, was named CEO of the Nampa St. Luke's Hospital and then left about 6 months ago to go to BVA. And when that announcement came up, I was
Everybody was like, what's
going on there? Yeah. And now we've got the purchase of Salzer. So I think something is afoot here. And I think what we probably are going to see is some – there definitely is a new player in this market in terms of healthcare competing with St. Al's and St. Luke's in this valley. So I think there's going to be more developments coming out. I think there's going to be more developments coming out about transparency in healthcare holistic approach to providing health care for their patients.
Well, I think it's probably worth noting that they're planning that medical center in what they call Central Valley Plaza, which is at Idaho 16 in Jindin.
Mm-hmm.
And their partner in that is HCA, which owns West Valley Medical Center. And HCA is one of the largest hospital systems in the country. So they aren't telling us.
And they're partnering with them.
Yeah, they're not telling us what they're planning, but
Small little doctor's office.
Like he said, Tommy's not a small thinker, so something's afoot.
You know, that would be so interesting to see what happens, because St. Luke's and St. Al's have been, the two games in town in the valley. I mean, and not just in the Treasure Valley, but really in southwestern Idaho. I can't remember a time without that. So then to bring in something new and potentially different, how does that change the landscape?
Well, and Ahlquist had privileges at St. Luke's and helped them develop out the Meridian campus and has a long history there. And I believe there's some interplay with St. Al's in his past, too. I don't recall. But so he knows the players here. He knows the landscape. And there's been a lot of change. There's a big shuffle coming at St. Luke's that's underway. Employees are moving around, and pay rates are changing, and a lot of folks inside that building, I'm sure Scott's getting the same tips that I am of questions about what's going on. And I think that's one of the biggest undercovered stories right now in the Boise Valley is what's happening at St. Luke's and why are they making these big changes?
And are these big changes within the sea level? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, they've put a number of nurses in top level management positions within St. Luke's. Like Don said, there's a lot going on, and we're hearing rumblings. We don't know the full story, but there's something going on a much bigger scale in healthcare in the valley.
I want to bring it on home with some bars and booze. So Don, a new bar opening in downtown Boise, shocker. But
yeah, right.
But talk a little bit about that. But then something going on in McCall too.
Yeah, so Water Bear is planned for 9th and Jefferson Streets downtown in the old Lata Furniture showplace. And this is a pretty interesting project. It's going to take a while to get it built. They're hoping to be open by spring. There are a couple of people that work as bartenders, and they really want to do something different and unique and special. 21 and up kind of a vibe. They'll have food, but it's not really aimed at food.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a block's walk from 10 Barrels, so it's kind of expanding the downtown footprint. So there's a story up on BoiseDev.com that kind of explains that right now. And then I think this is just endlessly fascinating. The Salmon River Brewery in McCall is expanding. There's actually a crane in the skyline of McCall, which...
Have we ever seen that?
I know. I was like, what is going on? This is crazy. They're building a new brewing facility right next to their restaurant over there by Hotel McCall, for people who are familiar. And it's going to allow them to increase capacity. They're going to have a new rooftop deck, which will be great in the summer, and a new facility inside for events and such. So that's really going to be an interesting development up there. And as I was digging into the story, I didn't know this, but the part owner of that is actually one of the offspring of the Anheuser-Busch family of the beer company.
And, oh, interesting.
And so he basically came to Idaho on a rafting trip and liked the Idaho Gold product that they have, and bought 49% of the venture. So they've got some interesting funding there. And so really cool growth story in Idaho to see a small brewer really expand.
And I have to say, just on a personal note, whenever you go to that brew, that restaurant,
it's packed.
It's packed.
Yeah.
So it's actually a good expansion.
It is, yeah, and it will give them better outdoor seating,
yeah,
and give them more options.
Yeah. I want to thank you guys for coming in. I love when we do our reporter roundtable to get us all updated. My guest today, Rebecca Boone with the Boise Bureau of the Associated Press, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Don Day with Boise Dev. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
Thank you.